Welcome back to part two of that classic rock show on WHRULP Huntley Community Radio. Let's continue our discussion with authors Jeff Lowenthal and Robert Schaffner about Fleetwood Mac's historic recording session at at Chess Studios in Chicago back in 1969. So let's listen to the song we promised you. Like It This Way, first time they performed the song in the studio. Robert, this one's for you. In your research for this book, were any members of Fleetwood Mac skeptical of this project? And this question also applies to the Chicago Blues participants, including Willie Dixon, Otis Band, who was my idol, by the way, Big Walter Horton, J.T. Brown, Honey Boy Edwards, S.P. Leary, and Buddy Guy.
It's a good question. Well, I'll answer that in two parts. According to Marshall Chess, the chess guys, Willie Dixon et al., were there for a paycheck. They were like, we can come in, we can, you know, do, they're used to doing 8-9 songs. They did 18, and we'll get some extra money. According to Mike Vernon, Peter Green was always wanting to prove his prowess by playing in Chicago, which he did after that session. He went to a club with Willie Dixon, and they were worried about him getting beat up. Him and Otis Spann took him to a blues club in Chicago, where he did prove his prowess to everybody. According to Mike Vernon, Mick Fleetwood was kind of into it. Jeremy Spencer was very into it because he was going to have an opportunity to play with his idol, J.T. Brown. He said John McVie didn't know what was going on. Danny Kirwin was, you know, okay with it. But it was basically Peter Green's wish for since 1967 to come to Chicago to play with his idols.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that Mick Fleetwood still loves the blues because in Maui, he has his own little club, and he has a little blues band that plays there once a week. And, you know, he's never lost his love for the blues. So I'm sure he was really into that, just like Peter Green was.
Well, that was, Robert, that was very insightful. That was a great story because I've always wondered about that from the beginning because I've always heard that the Chicago blues guys were, you know, a little skeptical about the British guys overseas. So I have another question for you, Robert, and this is something that's been sort of I've been wondering about for a long time. I've noticed that the original album credits are inconsistent. For example, the participating musicians are credited on some songs and then on other songs less so. Also, I noticed on the original, a player named Guitar Buddy was credited, but as we all know later on, the credit was changed to Buddy Guy. So do you have any insight into these things?
I do.
Oh,
I
great.
I can tell you that Mike Vernon, during the session, didn't realize that Buddy Guy was fighting with Chess. The reason that he's named Guitar Buddy was contractual issues. Because he was under contract. So when Mike Vernon would ask Buddy Guy to play or take a lead, he was very reluctant and would not do it. It wasn't until later that Mike Vernon realized that he was trying to get out of his contract with Chess because the Chess owners at the time, being older gentlemen, didn't really care for his raucous style.
Mm-hmm.
So several months after that session, he was released from his contract, and there's that Vanguard record that just killed.
Interesting. I noticed that, at least according to the way it's credited, Buddy Guy only played on a song called, I think, Red Hot Jam?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's listen to another really good song on Fleetwood Mac in Chicago. The song is Homework.
Anymore. anymore. I can't do my own work anymore. Can't do my own work anymore. Do my own work anymore. Can't do my own work anymore.
Welcome back, everyone, to part two of that classic rock show on WHRULP, Huntley Community Radio. We're going to continue our discussion with Jeff Lowenthal and Robert Schaffner about Fleetwood Mac's historic recording session at Chess Studios in Chicago way back in 1969. All right, Jeff, it's up to you now to answer a good question. You say that you're very focused on doing your job, as all photographers do. Sometimes do you regret that you didn't spend more time talking to the band?
Actually not, because in a case like this, when you're doing a lot of tunes in a limited time, they don't want me to express pleasantries with them. They're trying to get a job done. You'll be happy to know, I did talk to Otis Spann a lot, who I really enjoyed. I knew him from Muddy's band, but he was a beautiful guy and very open. And his wife was also at the session. She didn't take part in it, but she was sitting on the piano bench with him part of the time, and he just talked a little bit, and I found him to be a very nice guy, and it was good to know him. And beyond Fleetwood Mac, I'd say he was the most significant of the blues players, of the Chess blues players. And Mike Vernon liked his playing so much, they did another session with him in New York about a couple of weeks later with Peter Green and Danny Kerwin, I think.
Right. Matter of fact, he said he wanted to do the session with Fleetwood Mac in New York, with Peter Green especially, and that other kid. Couldn't remember Danny's name.
The other kid.
Well, I just wanted to say Otis Spann's piano playing is present in almost all of the songs. It's out there, and like I said, I was just kind of a sheltered Jewish kid in Rogers Park, and some guy once came up to me and when I was playing early on, and he said, boy, you sound like Otis Band. You know who this guy is? And I said, Otis who? And that's how I discovered him, and I think he's one of the best. And I'm Jeff, the fact that you got to talk to him and to hear that he was a beautiful human being, it's wonderful to hear. I know that he had, you know, all musicians have their issues, but
I can tell you that Marshall Chess and Mike Vernon both said they loved him and the best right hand of any blues pianist that ever lived. Well, and also in the book, I got to tell you, there's a great, just complete iconic picture of Otis Spann on the quote with Michael Freeman, the Grammy Award winning blues producer. It's just as iconic as the one you mentioned on my Facebook page of Peter Green. But this one is of Otis Spann.
And that's why everybody needs to go out and get this book. So, Robert, let's return to Peter Green. And this is something, again, I've thought about long and hard. We all ponder what Peter might have accomplished if we had reconciled his commercial success with being an authentic blues musician. This might be a Monday morning quarterback question, but do you think anyone or anything could have prevented Peter from descending into the darkness that took a terrible toll on his health and his playing ability?
Short answer is no. Peter Green was in his 20s, and you know, everybody talks about the Munich incident and drugs and that, which might have contributed to his condition, but the fact of the matter was Peter Green was a paranoid schizophrenic. And after he left Fleetwood Mac, they gave him electroshock therapy. So having a disease like that and then having electroshock therapy and being a ward of the state, et cetera, I don't think anything could help him. Okay. I mean, he had a mental disease.
Yeah. Do you think
maybe the drugs exasperated that, but who knows?
You know,
I think, Robert, you ought to mention that you met Peter Green after that instrument.
Yes, I did. And I got to tell you, I wept. Because he was walking around with his, I mean, obviously, I think in the 90s with the Splinter Group, my opinion is that he was used. should never have been on the road. It was really sad. I saw him in California, where Mick Fleetwood introduced him in tears. Toward the end of the set, he did have that guitar tone, and no, he wasn't playing his Les Paul. He was playing a turquoise Strat. So it's not the guitar, it's the player.
Well, it's
combination.
It's kind of funny. I remember reading, I think it was your interview with Buddy Guy, when Buddy Guy went over to England or wherever, he said the British guys were very surprised that you could play blues on a Stratocaster, something other than a Gibson.
And, right. And he's still laughing to this day about that.
Oh, is he really? That was a great, your interview with Buddy Guy was really insightful. Well, we're gonna play a couple songs from the album. We're gonna play Horton's Boogie Woogie, and that's gonna be followed up by Someday Soon Baby with Otis Bann, I believe, on lead vocal.
For your baby, don't have no mercy. Please don't have no mercy on me. Yeah, don't have no mercy. Please don't have no mercy on me. My mother, baby boy, you know I'm just a lost, lost sheep. Someday, baby, yeah, you know you will be all alone. Someday, someday, baby, yeah, you know you'll be all alone. If I mistreated you, baby, I must say, God knows I did.
One final question for you guys. I just want to talk to Jeff about his career. Obviously, you started out shooting, Fleetwood Mac at this very historic moment. But what was your career in photography? What did you do?
Well, I started out as a freelancer, like most people, and I photographed a second recording session with Franz Jackson, who I had photographed doing the High Five demonstration record. A couple of years later, he got a contract with Mercury. So then that session they did at Universal Studios, which was a state-of-the-art place. And that's like 2 years later, I was an improved photographer and the lighting was better. So I went there as a courtesy just to shoot it on my own. And the editor of Downbeat was also there, and his photographer was supposed to show up to shoot it for him, and he never showed up. So he said, let me see your pictures when they're ready. So I brought the pictures over to him, and he gave me a two-page layout with about 9 pictures in Downbeat, and that gave me the credit to be able to talk to Newsweek, who would demand that you had nationally published work before they'd even talk to you. So then I had nationally published work, and I got a shot at one job from Newsweek and just continued with them for years as a freelancer.
Well, you know, have you ever looked back, and I have, to myself, that we're at this age and we got to do what we got to do?
Oh, yeah. I've got a chance to meet a lot of great people, musicians included. And to give you an example, have like 30 minutes with some major executive or a scientist or somebody. I had to talk to the inventor of the synthesis of vitamin C, and I could ask him the question, is natural vitamin C any better? And I get the answer from the horse's mouth. He said, no, they're actually the same. So how many people could get to present that question to somebody of that stature?
I wish we had much more than an hour with you two guys. And I know Jeff and I could do a whole show on photography, but we're out of time, everybody. I hope, Jeff and Robert, I hope you had a good time.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
Well, I also wish we had more time, but since we don't, I highly recommend purchasing the book Fleetwood Mac in Chicago, The Legendary Chess Blues Sessions, July 4th, 1969. It'll make a great Christmas gift, Hanukkah gift, Kwanzaa gift, anytime gift, right?
Yeah, I'm sure it's available on Amazon, right, guys?
Yes, it's a Amazon, Target, Walmart, Schiffer, Barnes & Noble.
All the bookstores,
yeah. I'm going to run over there and get one right now. Please join us on the air every Monday from 6:30 to 7:30 and Fridays from 11 to noon on the Mighty 101.5 FM, Huntley Community Radio. And don't forget, if you miss our on-air broadcast, you can listen to our archive shows anytime by going to the Huntley Community Radio website and finding the link to That Classic Rock Show.
Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thank you.
Watch out for me, woman, and don't mind nobody else. Watch out for me, woman, and don't mind nobody else. Ain't got no crystal ball, but the future ain't hard to tell.